Live from Liverpool, we need to talk about ghosts with Kevin Eustace.
It's Sunday. Yeah, you know what that means. It's Sunday sermon time. We get to talk about ghosts for ages. Well, you know, for about an hour and a bit. I hope that you're all fantastically well. Are you? Reply. Good, good. And if anyone said no, Kevin, I'm not, then I'm sincerely sorry for saying good. Anyway, we've got a hell of a show for you today. We're going to speak to Matt in a bit. You know, our admin guy and also the host of Full Movie Podcast. We had a conversation for just under an hour the other day about all things spooky and ghostly. He's got some spooky stories about Kentish Town, where he works, and witch stories, which we don't get many of them now, do we? So there's a ghost story, a witch story. We also then have a general chat about the paranormal and cursed films. He's got some very interesting details about the Poltergeist movie, which is very, very spooky. Just to let you know on that chat, take it for what it is. Okay, we just have an open chat as two mates talking about the paranormal. Okay, so I appreciate that people tune into this show mainly just for the bulk of ghost stories. So we are going to have a good few ghost stories I'll read out at the start, and then we'll go into the interview with Matt. It's a bloody good one too. We have a good laugh, so I hope you do enjoy it. And also don't forget to go and check out Matt's fantastic podcast, Full Movie Podcast, where I believe he's doing... I don't get it, I'll be honest, because I'm not into Marvel and all that. But there's some big, massive film coming out, and it's like 4 hours long, to do with Spider-Man? No, it's not. It's to do with Batman, Superman, and they're all together in some sort of army. People who like Marvel will be like, oh my god, why don't you even know the name of the super duper Avenger people? And I'm like, because I don't, I'm sorry. I very much would like to. In fact, I was talking with Brennan and Paul on the Ghost Story Guys Patreon show last night. We'd done a watch along to a film called The Seven Golden Vampires, and it's a god awful film, but we had a good laugh. And and on that, they were talking about this same thing, and that's why I'm so surprised the name evades me. But it's 4 hours long, and it's called... I'm going to have to Google it. No, I'm not going to Google it because it'll take too much time. It's called something like... Zack's Avengers? No, I don't know what it is. I'll be perfectly honest. Anyway, don't email me about what it is as well. I'm sure I'll see it as soon as I leave this room. There'll be a poster for it or something. But anyway, my point of it is, they were banging on about this. So I said, you know what? Matt was talking about this. I'm going to have to give it a watch. And they went, well, yeah, as long as you've watched all like 48 Marvel films, then you'll know what's going on. I was like, well, no, I haven't. And they went, oh, you might have to give a watch to them first. It was like, bloody hell's bells. So there's a good chance I'll never get to see this 4 hours. But, you know, that's a WrestleMania 4, as I now measure things in. So, in other news, our Patreon is going from strength to strength. And if you'd like to join our Patreon, you need to go to patreon.com/ we need to talk about ghosts. And over there, you'll get 2 extra shows a week. Yes, 2, just for you and your little old ears. And this week's Patreon episode, which I'm going to release today, is going to be about Ouija boards that have gone wrong. Yes, all right, depending on how you look at it, I suppose. But a big thank you to our new Patreons. We're going to sing a little song for those guys after we've done Weekend Weird. And don't forget, guys, we're forever taking your stories. And if you want to come on the show, even like Matt does today, and have a discussion about your ghost experience, all you need to do is drop me an email, either with your story on or with a, hey, let's meet up via Zoom and talk via the magic of the internet, to contact@talkaboutghosts.com. That's all you need to do. I just had to pause that then because the neighbour's cat was scratching on the door to come in. So say hello, neighbour's cat. You're not going to, are you? No, I didn't think you would. You just sit on that windowsill and look out. Oh, before we do Weekend Weird, this has had me in bulk the last week. And that's what I say when I mean I've been laughing a lot at this. And it's not very PC. I'm just literally opening the door to a conversation that me and Becca had. And I've played it back in my head loads of times, and I keep giggling at it because I'm a child. So I apologise to anyone that this may offend. Hopefully it doesn't, and you'll see where I'm going. There was a protective innocence in what I was saying. But anyway, I'll get to the point. An advert came on the telly the other day, right? And this, me and Becca are watching TV, and this woman, just bold as brass, and why not, you would say, just comes up to the screen and goes, like, my name's Jean, and I've started wedding myself. And I'm like, what? Like, I mean, so I say to Becca, that, you know, why do we have to try and normalize everything? She was like, what do you mean? I said, well, I said, my point is, I said, by all means, have the advert and have the product. I said, but she's acting like it's blasé, like this is a completely normal thing that takes place. She was like, Becca's like, well, it is for a lot of people. I was like, yeah, but should it be presented as a normal thing? Because what if somebody watches that and thinks, oh, this is normal. Oh, brilliant. And she's like, well, that wouldn't happen. I'm like, well, you never know. And she went, no, no, I think you're being very immature there, to be honest. She said, this advert could help a lot of people who are embarrassed by it. And she's right. You know, she's like, a lot of people could be embarrassed by this. And it should be an advert. It should be presented how it is. And you're just being very immature. So then I got me back up and was like, no, I think you'll find that I'm being the protector here. I said, so for example, what if some poor guy is watching this and he goes, oh, it's normal. And next time he's down the pub with his mates, he turns around and thinks, well, the advert said it was normal. So, hey, lads, so I've started wetting myself. I said, that poor lad, next time he goes in the pub, will forever be known as Pissy Johnny. And I was deadly serious. And Becca just looked at me and went, and that's your response to being called immature. And you know that minute when somebody just has you off at such a classic level that you can only laugh and think, yes, I am being a complete tit. You're quite right. And of course she was right. Of course she was right. But it made me howl. It absolutely made me howl. And every time I think about it, I burst out laughing because I'm like, yeah, what a tit, Kevin. Of course she's right. Anyway, so that's a little delve into our television watching habits and the conversations we therefore have. Anyway, shall we see what weird things have been happening in the week? I think we shall. Yes, it's that time of the week when we look at what weird, wonderful and spooky things have been taking place in the last 7 days. Well, here in the UK, largely due to COVID, sadly, one of the main chocolate stores has decided it's going to close all of its UK stores. That's a company called Thornton's, who are renowned for chocolate here in the UK. Lovely chocky. Anyway, it's a very sad story, but what's come out of that is a manager of the Chester store has come forth and said, well, whoever takes over our gaff is going to have a haunted shop. And they've went to the local newspaper, Cheshire Live, about it. So, it says, and I'm taking this directly from the article, it says, what many people don't know is that the site of the Eastgate store is the location of an eerie tale. Folklore says that Sarah, a young lady living on Eastgate Street in the late 18th century, fell in love with a man called Wilhelm, who ended up jilting her on their wedding day. Sarah was said to be so devastated at being jilted that she returned to her home and hung herself, causing havoc on the premises ever since. She has never been physically seen, but it's said she's made her presence very much known over the years. One of the shop's managers once experienced a possession when staff spotted them coming down the stairs singing an unknown song and holding her hands out as if lifting a long, heavy dress in order to descend the stairs. The manager can offer no explanation for this, but other strange things continued to occur. Shortly after this incident, an American tourist, who dismissed the stories as rubbish, was immediately pushed down the stairs by an invisible hand. Then, an electrician who went to read the meter in the cellar was not there for long before he ran back up the stairs. He said he felt he was being watched by something very unpleasant. Sarah has also provided helpful to the police when a burglar broke into the shop and stole the day's takings from the safe. He felt so spooked that he fled in a hurry, leaving behind all of his tools and a full set of fingerprints. Sarah was supposed to have also taken a dislike to the shop's Valentine display in 1991, scattering the heart-shaped boxes all over the shop floor, while the ordinary boxes of chocolates that had been stacked in front of them remained undisturbed. So there we have it. A chocolate-hating ghost, maybe. Now, she sounds terrifying, doesn't she? Especially if she's got the power to possess. I like to think that I'll get in touch with that shop and we'll arrange to go and do a vigil, but I know I won't. But I should, really, shouldn't I? Maybe I should put more effort into this. Maybe I should. Maybe I will. Maybe we'll find out next week. No, we won't. Anyway, guys, that's been this week's Week in Weird. Okay, so we need to sing to our two new wonderful Patreons. Not only when you become a Patreon, you get extra shows each and every week, but you also help us stay afloat. Help this little independent show stay afloat. So if you like us, go and do it. Hooray. So our two new Patreons go by the wonderful names of Melanie Livers and Nicola Handforth. And if you're like me, you can automatically hear the cadence in their two names together. So therefore, we're going to sing a little acoustic-y Beatles-y number to say thank you. The guitar is out. And it goes like this. Yeah. Melanie Livers and Nicola Handforth have signed up to Patreon. Two extra shows, and not only that, but they're keeping all the lights here on. Yes, they're keeping all the lights here on. So I say thank you, guys. Everyone. Melanie Livers and Nicola Handforth have signed up to Patreon. Two extra shows, and not only that, but they're keeping all the lights here on. Yes, they're keeping all the lights here on. So I say thank you, guys. Oh, there we go. And I ended it on a seventh, which is the way we do things around here. Anyway, thank you both ladies. That's very nice of you to sign up. If you'd like to become a Patreon and join that exclusive club that is the Patreon, go to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosties. Oh, wait there. I'll say it right. Don't put that in, you'll get nowhere. Go to patreon.com/we-need-to-talk-about-ghosts. That's it. There's no ghosties. Well, there is, and we're about to hear about them now. So our first email today comes in from the wonderful Katie, and she sent in a trio of terrifying tales. Yes, she has. And we're going to read them all out. And her email, no genders in emails, please. Her email goes thus. Hi, Kev, Becca and the neighbour's cat. Hi.
Hi.
And meow. It's Katie again. I have a few stories which may interest you. I've worked in nursing for 10 years this year, and now work is thankfully less chaotic from the naughty C word. I can finally share some of the more scary ones with you. Wow, what an intro. So without further ado, let's get to Katie's first terrifying tale. I now work predominantly in ICU. We had a patient for 4 months in 2018/19. He went from being very, very unwell to okay back to being unwell. One day, his wife came in as usual at the usual time. She came up to me, in brackets, the nurse in charge for that day, and said something felt off and wanted to meet with the staff. She'd had an awful nightmare about him, in brackets, we shall call him D for the sake of privacy. A few hours after his wife, S, had left, things took a turn for the worst. My hospital is a speciality centre for a lot of the region, so we regularly get patients from across our county. His wife lived an hour away. D became unwell. We called S and said she needs to come back in to see him. Within the hour it took her to come back, the events she described in her nightmare came to life. In brackets, he was seeing their late son. Her mother called her repeatedly. She had to pull over due to feeling like she was having a stroke. D unfortunately passed away not long after his wife arrived. We were waiting for the porters to take him down to pathology. He was in a side room with two massive windows and a door with a window in it. The blinds were all drawn for privacy and dignity. We saw the shadow of a tall, slender man walk across the window. The clock above his door flew off the wall, and when we went back into the room to see if the porters had arrived due to seeing the shadow, we found his CD player playing Leaving on a Jet Plane. For weeks, he has said he was going on holiday in a few weeks and had to be better. Wow. That is terrifying. And it's an interesting one because I know that people will listen to that and hear the description of that shadow man as a slender shadow man. And some may automatically go, oh, a slender man, as if. But that's not what Katie's saying here. She's just describing that he's a very slight shadow. So that is terrifying and interesting that the wife had a premonition as well. Wow. Thank you, Katie. Let's get on to your second terrifying tale of titillation. While I was working in the emergency department, we had a patient one, come in the middle of the night. He had many mental health issues and was well known to us at this point. When he was severely unwell, he had religious delusions of grandeur. In brackets, basically, he thought he was a holy being who could see the world's sins. Nothing out of the ordinary for acute/emergency medicine. However, this one particular night, he was in the bay next to an unknown male who'd been severely assaulted. Patient 1 was screaming and shouting about the man in the next bed, patient 2. Being evil, inhuman, the devil. In brackets, keep in mind that they hadn't laid eyes on each other at this point. Patient 2 turned out to be a prolific prisoner in the UK who had done some awful, awful crimes. Once patient 2 had been moved to a different area, patient 1 wanted to speak to the chaplaincy department to be cleansed of this person's energy because it was so bad. Wow. That is amazing. And it touches on slightly. And, you know, it's you have to be very careful. I feel like I'm treading on eggshells, which I don't like. I don't like that you have to feel like that when you're discussing things about mental health. Because, you know, it's obvious that people who don't work in that department or that area are going to get terminology wrong. They may not say things in the right way, but it doesn't mean they're being offensive. So I want to say that before I say this. But we have in the past talked about, you know, maybe there is some sort of maybe there is some sort of interaction between what's perceived as a mental illness and some sort of psychic gift. And I'm not for any stretch of the imagination saying that that should be taken as some sort of serious medical situation or theory or anything like that. But I've said it before about my nan who had, when she had dementia, you know, and she was in a dementia home and there was a lot of people who would often be in there saying like, oh, my husband's come, the husband's been dead 10 years and things like that. And I just wonder if, as you know, part of your mental faculties fail, it does open the doorway to something else. I don't know, just an idea. Anyway, thank you, Katie. That's another terrifying tale. And she will wrap things up with your third tale of terrific, terrifying titillation. Yes, we shall. When I first started my nursing career, I had a placement on an elderly medical ward, where I looked after the most lovely woman. At this point, I was going through a lot of dark personal things which nobody from work or university knew about at the time. This lady grabbed me by the hand and told me that I would soon be safe. I was loved, and my little girl will always be looking after me. At the time, I was in an abusive relationship. I had become pregnant, which I didn't know about at the time, and I was convinced by my ex that my family didn't love me anymore because I was so unlovable. Somehow this lady saw into my soul and said what I needed to hear. Sadly, she passed 5 weeks later. I went to her funeral and her daughter thanked me for believing in her mother's gift. Wow. Amazing. It's a short one, I grant you, but that's a terrifyingly beautiful but eerie story. Somebody just grabbing you and saying, I know all about you. I don't know why they sound like that, but Katie, and you know what? I'm really sorry to hear that you were in an abusive relationship. If there's one thing, as I've said many a time before on the shows, generally out of everything, as my dad always used to say, I don't know if I should say this, it doesn't say a lot about me, dad, but my dad used to say, you know, you'd sooner have a murderer than an abuser, because you can sometimes get to the bottom of why a murderer is a murderer. Do you know what I mean? An abuser is just throughout evil, because it's constant. You know, if somebody kills someone in a flash of anger or something like that, it's kind of a one-off, isn't it? You know, this is the point that he was trying to make, whereas an abuser is somebody who wakes up daily with the intent to go out and control someone else. So people like that, I would happily skin alive. I've got no fucking issues with it, pardon my French, but I haven't. But Katie, thank you very much for those three stories. And you sign off your email by saying, feel free to use in any order. I did. Read them all or pick whichever you like the most. I read them all. Update on the Ouija recording. You'll record, Katie's the same person that sent us that audio where one of the guys on the Ouija board session she'd done kind of got possessed by some weird Viking sort of Norwegian thing, I think. Anyway, she says, I was listening to the episode laying in bed. My partner was sleeping beside me. When his voice came on, he sat up, growled, and went back to sleep. That put the shits up me. Not today, demons. Not today. Keep up the fantastic work, Katie. Wow. I've never ever give relationship advice I've never give relationship advice out on this show, but I will say, Katie, perhaps it's time you move your boyfriend into the spare room for now and you sleep with the door locked and some sage. I've no idea why sage. I've no idea how you use it. I'm joking. I'm sure he's a nice guy. Well, he clearly is. He's just possessed. Moving swiftly on, I'm now going to speak to Mr. Matt Toppin about the paranormal, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, so I always start this off by saying okay, but never mind.
You do.
I do indeed. Well, We have a caller in, and it's a repeat caller, and it's our wonderful, good friend of the show, Mr. Matt Toppin from, is it Toppin or Topin? I've never actually asked the pronunciation.
Toppin. Toppin.
Okay. From Full Movie Podcast. And he's here.
Hello.
He's obviously, you may know him as the admin on the Facebook page, because the guy puts an absolute shift in, and I sincerely need to thank you for that. And also, at any time, you know, don't feel obliged to keep doing it. You may be sat there thinking, I do more than he does, and you definitely do.
We have had a request at like 3 o'clock in the morning. It's like, oh, do I leave it to Kevin? Nah, it's all right. Hello, welcome to the group.
Exactly, yeah. So if you're a member of the Facebook group, and if you're not, you should go over facebook.com/talkaboutghosts. Matt's our one and only admin over there, and he's, aside from running his own podcast, Full Movie Podcast, which you should also go and check out with his partner Freya, he does a sterling job. So much so, to the point, I was laughing with Becca before, because one of the new guys, I've seen that you got onto it, as sent a story and addressed it to Matt and Becca.
I didn't want to bring it up, but yeah, I did see that, and I was like, there's another guy involved in this somewhere.
Yeah, it was amazing. I said to Becky, do you know if there was any sort of like physical proof in the pudding that I don't do enough work on this Facebook group, it's that. So it did make me laugh, but it's at the same time, what do I expect? You do all the work on there, so.
My pleasure.
Well, no, you're a hero, and I've been meaning to say that. I don't know why I waited till we record until I said that, but I suppose you should get a public thank you also. So there you go. My hat is off to you, sir.
Thank you. Oh, while we're at it, happy St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Happy. I don't know why I'm saying thank you like I am St. Patrick, but happy St. Patrick's Day to you too. It won't be when this goes out, obviously, but are you drinking Guinness?
I am. I do have a can on the go.
Oh, fair play. Yeah, no, I'm still not drinking officially, so I have an Iron Brew, which is Celtic still. So, it was funny, actually, as well. One of the lads I used to work with, still do work in the same place with, but he's contributed to the podcast before, and he's a good mate of mine. He refers to you as Matt Top Man.
All right.
Because of your work on such things as the admin side of things. He literally sent me a text before on the subject. He was talking about something going on in Dan and Emma's page. And he said, by the way, I went to give you a shout out on the Real Life Ghost Stories group, but I noticed Matt Top Man already had. And I was like, get in, you guys are the best.
I like how your mates have got nicknames for me now. That's
well, exactly. This is it, yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's how it rolls. So anyway, enough waffle. Lovely waffle, but waffle nonetheless. We are obviously here because you got in touch and said there's a guy you needed to seek permission off to share his spooky story.
Yeah.
And then we also are going to have a little chat about ghosts of ye olde London, well, history of ye olde London town, and possibly some spooky curses in films as well.
Oh, yes, we are. Basically, I should point out that the place where I work is based in Kentish Town. It's just behind the Forum there. Been working there for a couple of years now. I'm the manager of the day service. So it's quite often I'm there alone, nobody else about. We've got cleaners who come by, and because we've got socially distanced and we've got bubbles and all that jazz, I see people walk around in white overalls quite often.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. So I've had a couple of weird experiences, but I don't know if I'm going to say it's paranormal or not. They're just a bit odd.
Yeah.
It's the whole reason why I chatted to my mate at work about this. Basically, it started off about, I think it was November, December time. I was with one of the girls. We'd just finished work, and we were just having a chat about stuff. And just behind me, I heard a kind of knock.
Mm.
Just a knock, like something had fallen on the floor. And it was like, straight away, it's a ghost. And the only thing that was behind me was a chair, just one of these chairs you stack up.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that was weird. Did somebody just move that chair? There's nobody behind me. And I was like, oh, okay, that was a bit weird. Never mind. Must be playing tricks in my mind. And then about 2 months ago, I just got into work. I'd made myself a cup of tea, and I was just walking into the main reception area. I shared a video with you about it.
Yeah.
And I walked into the main reception area, And as I was going in there, I just saw somebody walk past the front door. And I was like, oh, we've got workers in. So I went to go, you all right, mate? Can I help you? Thinking I were lost. Nobody there. That good old ghostly trait, it just vanished. But yeah, it was like somebody just walked in front of me, like about 10 foot away from me. Just walked and then vanished.
So like a corner of the eye phenomena, but...
No, I was straight on.
Yeah, that's, I was trying to think of a way how you describe corner of the eye phenomena directly in front of you. Directly in front of you phenomena.
That was exactly what it was. What is it? Front tap.
Faux tap? I love it. Yeah, yeah. Let's have that. Yes, okay. Good man.
So, yeah, I went and chatted to the building manager, a lovely guy who doesn't want his name to be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he turned around and said, you can tell the story, but you have to call me Penfold.
Amazing. Now,
it's a great name, but I think just for the spookiness, I'm going to call him something else. So I'm going to call him Steve. Because I don't think Penfold is going to get the atmosphere going that much. You
yeah,
know?
And I don't think also, like, for the American listeners, they might not know who Danger Mouse is or that he had a little sidekick called Penfold. So Danger Mouse was basically like James Bond, but a cartoon mouse version, and he had a sidekick called Penfold. It was like a little mole sort of guy, I suppose.
Yeah, he was. He was glasses, a little bit nerdy, but he was a good egg, you know? So, yeah, he said, you can tell the story, but you have to call me Penfold, so I'm going to call him Steve.
Fair play.
So I said to him, has anything weird happened here? And he said, why? And I went through the whole shtick of what happened. And he went, well, funnily enough, I've had a couple of weird things. And it's like, oh, yeah, right, come on then, tell me. I know a guy in a podcast, and he'll tell the story. And he's like, all right, okay. Well, he's regularly come in and found his computer on. Even though he turns it off,
right,
which is a little bit off. And it's like, okay, well, maybe that can be explainable. Okay, no worries. And then he said, one of the cleaners doesn't like going up to the second floor. Now, the second floor isn't the top floor. It's just the floor above his.
Yeah.
Doesn't like going up there for no reason and doesn't like to tell people why. Now, I've asked that cleaner and... flat out to me, they're like, no, no, don't want to talk about it. And I was like, well, you know, I know this guy does podcasting, so just tell me a little bit. And he was like, no, 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 don't want to know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, all right, fair enough, no worries. So I spoke to Steve, and I was like, you know, you got any other ghostly stories that you can tell me? Because, you know, we're talking about all ghost stuff. And he went, yeah, you know, I used to work in a pub back in Isle of Wight. I was like, okay, cool. So it's a pub story. He's like, yeah, yeah, yeah. It was just a little pub in the Isle of Wight. Didn't get many people there, maybe six or seven on a busy night. He's like, all right, okay, little country pub. He said, but we did have a regular ghost. I was like, all right, well, what do you mean by regular ghost? Well, he used to like playing cards.
Right.
What? Playing cards. Yeah, we used to leave a deck of cards on the bar for it. And he used to muck around with it when nobody was looking. And straight away, I was like, I've heard something very similar about that. And he was like, have you? And I was chatting about your podcast and everything. And he was like, oh, well, try and find out. And I went back over the episodes. I couldn't find it. So that was a bit weird. And I went, okay, so what did they used to do with the cards? It's like, well, I never saw it, but... what we used to do, we used to leave a couple of decks of cards just at the end of the bar.
Mm.
And we used to leave it in the ashtray, one of the big square-style ashtrays you've got in the pubs.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, we'd go about our day, no problem. Sometimes we'd get there in the morning, cards would be everywhere. Sometimes we'd get them, the ashtray would be upside down. We don't have cleaners, we clean it ourselves. So it's just us. It's like, okay, that's kind of weird. It's one night... we had a couple of holiday makers in. And it was a quiet night. It was just them two and me and somebody else in the pub. So there were two workers and two guests. And one of these guests called the barman over and said, sorry, is this place haunted? And I was like, all right, okay. Yes, apparently it is. Why? What's happened? He was like, well, there was a woman sat over there at the bar. And we didn't see her come in, and we're by the door. Like, what? So you actually saw the woman? And as they were talking, she was trying to explain this woman that she saw at the bar.
Yeah.
Her husband turned around and went, "There she is," and pointed over to the bar, and the cars just went off the bar.
Wow. And she wasn't there at the when so
he wasn't there. Turned around, nothing, but the man who was with them saw her and the cars just went on the floor.
Wow. That's amazing. I love that. And because you assume it's a man as well when you say it's kind of a sexist thing to say, but inherently when somebody says it's a pub ghost, you think it's a geezer, don't you?
Yeah. But no, this was a woman at the bar. And I was like, that is a damn fine story, you know? Yeah. And but then I'll come on to Camden just real quick, because you had asked me if there was any history about Kenneth when we messaged each other. And I couldn't find loads. I used to think that where my place of work is used to be a bus depot, but it goes a lot further back than that, obviously. So where I work in Kentish Town, it started off, the place where I work is called the Greenwood Centre. Yeah, it's named after a bloke called Thomas Greenwood, who was basically a really well-to-do, popular landlord, and he used to own a bunch of properties in and around Kentish Town.
Yeah.
The funny thing about him, he was such a nice guy that when he died, in his will, he didn't leave the property to his wife, Elizabeth. No, he left it to his son, who was 2 years old. Good guy.
Typical.
What a nice guy. And in Kentish Town, they're all sort of little historical things, like, for instance, the site where I work, there's like a rich history of like Roman battles. There's a Mussolini little thing going on there. And also the Kentish Town Forum was the place where I was on the guest list for The Who in 2004.
Amazing.
I know, right?
That's fantastic. You know what? Kentish Town Forum's the one venue that I've never been to. We've been down to, because Becca went to university in Greenwich. We've been down to London. We go down to London once a year, probably. We didn't last year, obviously, but when we do, we go to Camden Town, and the only place that we ever go for a drink is the Wetherspoons by the canal.
The Lock.
And that's because it's the only place in London that does Northwest prices for pints.
Ooh, I'll tell you what, next time you're down, I'm going to point some places out to you, because I know a few places.
You can take me for a pint and we'll meet up.
Hats off, I will. I promise you I will. I will also say that the Forum was the first place I ever saw, the first place I ever went to a gig by myself. Yeah. I was only 12 and went to see Danzig and White Zombie there. So it's I know, that's a good first
really
gig by myself. So it's got some crazy history. I think the weird one for me, though, in Camden, it's quite well known about Ginny or Jenny Bellum. She was a woman who, she was brought up well. She had a well-to-do family, but she had a few issues with husbands. Now, one of the issues was her first husband vanished. Yeah,
of course he did. Yeah,
like, all right, fair enough. Right, okay. Fair
is
enough.
That on the death certificate? Cause of death vanished.
Yes, exactly. So it was like, okay, that's a bit weird. And then she got remarried like a couple of months after that. And she, by this time on her second marriage, she was 19.
Wow.
Which that's like, wow. That's exactly.
Did she get the inheritance off the first one? Just out of
interest? No, she didn't. Okay. This is one of those poisonous cabinets things, you know. This is this quite weird thing. So the next thing, she got remarried. She was 19 years old. Her family disowned her, and she lived in Kentish Town. She lived all over. Like, I think she was renting more than anything back in the day. She lived in different parts, but one of those places was the Greenwood Place.
Right.
It was the street where I work. So in there, she lasted 2 years with a man who was considerably older than her. Now, he died very unexpectedly. And it was very, then straight away, it was like, oh, I bet she killed him, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody ever had evidence. Nothing came up about this. She moved away from the Greenwood Place and she moved into the World's End. Back then, it was called, what was it called? Mother Redcap. She was Mother Redcap.
Right. Now, World's End being a pub.
Yeah, the World's End and the Underworld, which is underneath it,
yeah,
they used to be houses. Right. And I used to live down the road from there, actually. But she was known in the area of Mother Redcap. Now, also in that area now to this day, there was a very famous gay bar in Camden called the Black Cap. Mm. It's named after her. She right. was. She had many different names. One of them was like Mother Redcap. One was Mother Damnable. Another one was the Shrew of Kentish Town. You know, yeah. So she's got quite a rich history. So her husband died, and she basically, because all these rumours were flying around about her, she became a bit of a recluse.
Mm.
And because she was a recluse, she couldn't get a job, she couldn't earn any money, she had no way of paying bills. So she started to become a, inverted commas, medium.
Okay.
She would read people's palms and tell people what was going to happen to them in the future. Yeah. Now, she was quite famous for telling people, you're going to die soon, and then offer them a drink.
Wow. Not a poison drink. Like, I keep going back to poison, but like it wasn't like, you're going to die soon, please drink this. Ah, there you go. There's another tick in my credibility box.
Exactly. This little broth that is boiling. Yeah, you have that. It's good for you. It's good for you. But yeah, so she essentially did become known for killing men, even though her first husband vanished, her second husband died a little bit quicker than he should have done, but died. Mm. So in her property, she just stayed there. She was very recluse. She didn't go out. She didn't interact with any other people other than people who wanted to have their palms read or they wanted to get their future told.
Yeah.
In that area, a family went missing and everybody went straight to her saying, this was you, this was you. And it was almost like Burn the Witch sort of thing.
Right.
Now, I think she was set up here because she got taken away and they found bits of human remains in her kitchen.
Right.
Now, again, I think she was set up. I don't think that she's this bad killer, but she was forever known for boiling children in Camden and eating them. And there was apparently a giant bowl that she used to boil people in. And she became known as the Camden Witch.
Mm.
And that is all I know of her. She went and died.
Isn't that interesting? I think when you discussed that you were going to talk about Ginny Blackcap, Ginny Redcap, was it?
Ginny Bellum.
Ginny Bellum.
She's known as the Mother Redcap or Mother Damnable or the Shrew of Kentish Town.
Because where I thought you were going to go with it, only because the name Ginny, and it's an interesting one because in Liverpool folklore, we have Ginny Greenteeth. Now, Ginny Greenteeth, apparently, I thought it was just a Liverpool legend, but apparently there's a Ginny Greenteeth in Newcastle, there's one in Wales, and our Ginny Greenteeth allegedly haunts the Anglican Cathedral quarry, which is now a graveyard. It's got like 74,000 bodies in it or something. But apparently Ginny Greenteeth was just a common folklore that parents would tell the kids so that they didn't go near like dangerous places, like pools of water or cliff tops and stuff. Ginny Greenteeth will get you so that you don't go out of a night and fall to your death.
Well, funnily enough, the World's End is supposedly haunted by the ghost of Ginny Bellum. I think that is folklore then.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you've got songs written about her. You've got that Frank Turner-Geezer. He did a song about her. And you've got a plaque outside the World's End, which has, like, the story of Mother Redcap. I really thought that was just a Camden thing. I've never known that it was across all of the UK.
Well, I mean, I'm just going off the first name, Ginny, but, I mean, if she was allegedly renowned for being a witch that captured children and put them in a stew, so to speak, you know, again, it sounds like another, here's why you don't go out at night, kids.
Yeah.
Maybe.
There you go. I think that's it. I think it is just a kind of old wives' tale. It's something to scare the kids, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's interesting that if, like, you know, there's a record of a being there and there's a plaque and all that, there's none of that for Ginny Greenteeth. It's just like rumor and hearsay. And there is. In fact, do you remember? You won't remember. I don't remember it, but I've seen repeats on UK Gold. There was, which is like a rerun television program in the UK. There was a Scouse or Liverpool-based comedy program from the 70s called The Live Birds.
Yeah, I've heard Live Birds.
Yeah, and the intro song for that is a reference to Ginny Greenteeth. It says, "On a mount there stands a lady, who she is I do not know." And that's a song, a Liverpool song about Ginny Greenteeth.
All right, okay. That's pretty cool. That is cool.
It is pretty cool, yeah, yeah. It's funny because we were talking about like London and Camden and all the likes of that when I was saying to Becca what we were going to be talking about before, and it's not paranormal, but it was one of the funniest things I've ever encountered. We were in Covent Garden,
right?
And we were in like a bar that overlooked the square there, and apparently it's known as Performers Square or something. There's like a lot of people doing acts. And we were just, it was a sunny day, we were just having a shandy. It was like cost about a tenner for the shandy, but we were sat there having a drink. And there was this guy downstairs, like in the square, and he'd gathered people round and he was like balancing on a ball. And, you know, just like a street entertainer. Now, you get them in Liverpool all the time, obviously, in any city, and you walk past them. If you're interested, just stop. You maybe throw a couple of quid if you like it, whatever else. And when this guy finished his act, people started, like, at the back of the crowd, started to walk away, and he absolutely berated people. He was like, "They've just watched 30 minutes of entertainment in London, which would cost them £50 down on the East End, and now, or down on the West End, and now they're just walking away for free. Is that right, ladies and gentlemen?" And I was like, oh my fucking God, this guy is going bananas. He came up to the pub, to the balcony where we were, with his hat, and was like, "You guys were watching that too?" And I went, "We weren't, mate. You can do one." Just, you know, but the also thing that I will say about Camden, which is, I mentioned it the other day again to Becca, because it really stuck with me and I thought, fair play, is, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot of people homeless nowadays and there's a lot of people begging on the streets. And like, if you walk down Bold Street in Liverpool, as I've mentioned on some of the mini podcasts, you'll be stopped maybe 5 or 6 times on the one street. You know, "Have you got any change, mate? Have you got, can you spare this?" And it's always for something which people need. You know, obviously it's like, "Can you spare 20p for a cup of tea? Have you got a pound so I can get home?" And all this carry on. In Camden, I seen the most truthful couple of beggars, and there was two guys with mohawks, and they were sat down with a cardboard sign that said, "Get punks drunk." And they just had a little cap in front of them. And I was like, "Becca, go and give them a fiver right now, because they're just honest and I want to get them drunk." So we did. I thought that, you know, that's probably where it's going.
Regulars down there, they are. I know a couple of those punks and all. But yeah, that's what you do. You stand by the lock and you say, "A pound for a photo," you know. It's just basically just get you drunk, you know. Yeah, there's some good people down Camden Way. I admit, I've been going Camden pretty much all my life. When I was properly young one, I used to go skating down there. And then in my teens, I'd just go to gigs and go out drinking and going to pubs. Because basically, you walk into a pub in Camden, and if you've got a London accent like me, it's like, "Yeah, all right, you can come in, even though you're 15. You know, so they're decent down there. And yeah, now I work for them. So it's good. They pay my rent, you know.
Fair play. Okay, so moving away from London then, Matt, you also said you had some tales of curses and the likes to do with the film The Poltergeist.
Oh, yes, boy, do I. Yeah. So I should point out that we did a kind of film curses special on full movie podcast. My teeth aren't coming through yet. We kind of not debunked it, but the thing is, so for films such as The Wizard of Oz, the film was in production for 2 years. And, you know, in 2 years, people are going to die.
Yeah.
And that's the same with The Exorcist. The film took like a year and a bit to make. And in that year and a bit, like 9 people died.
Yeah.
Now, yeah, granted, you get a lot of things with horror films, like this film is cursed and whatnot. But in actual fact, these are kind of to be expected.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the whole rumour about Reagan's, there was a fire on the set and all the set got burnt down with the exception of Reagan's room.
Yeah.
And do you know why? because it was basically a giant freezer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, of course, it's not going to be warm enough to set fire to, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of little things, but Poltergeist is one which does have some freaky things going on.
Mm.
Now, I should point out that it was made to be a family film. It was never meant to be a big, horrible horror film like The Exorcist or The Omen or something. This was supposed to be a family film. It was from director of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Toby Hooper.
Renowned for his family films.
But the thing was, he was also known for being a screenwriter as well. He did uncredited roles for Close Encounters, Steven Spielberg's film. So Steven Spielberg wasn't allowed to direct Poltergeist because there was a whole problem with the Screenwriters Guild and Directors Guild. They weren't allowed to direct at the same time. So he got Toby Hooper to make this little ghost film. And it's a little bit of a Hollywood rumor that it was mostly directed by Spielberg, but Hooper was the name saying directed by.
Yeah.
In the film series, a lot of people know that Heather O'Rourke died at the age of, I think she was 12 at that age when she passed away. Dominic Dunn, who played the sister, was murdered by her boyfriend, John Sweeney. And that was just before the film was released. Her brother was, I can't remember his name. It was the lead actor in American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
Then you had Julian Beck, who played Kane. He passed away again before Poltergeist 2 was released of stomach cancer. And then Will Sampson, who plays the Navajo witch doctor, Taylor. He passed away within a few months of the film being released. So there's quite a few deaths linked with it.
Yeah.
And a lot of those can kind of be like, oh, well, that's just unfortunate. For instance, nobody can say when a murder's going to happen. And Julian Beck was very, very old. Will Sampson was going through, I think it was a transplant at the time when he died.
Right.
So
it wasn't unexpected.
Exactly. But there was a weird one about Heather O'Rourke. The film was released in 1982 and it was made in 1982. It only took a couple of months to make the film. They had to go back and reshoot a couple of bits, add some gore in there because it wasn't scary enough. And the studio was expecting a horror film, and Spielberg and Hooper produced this kind of nice ghost film.
Yeah.
So they put some gore in there. And there's a big rumour about real skeletons being used in the pool scene.
Yeah, that's the infamous rumour that everyone kind of knows by now, I think, don't they? But is that true?
Well, yes, it is. It's 100% true. And you know what? Hollywood has been using real skeletons for a long, long time.
Really?
Because, yeah, they're just old medical skeletons.
Oh, okay.
That's all they are. They're not dug up from a graveyard.
These
are people who have donated their body to science.
Yeah.
That's all it is. William Castle did a lot of spooky films. He did The House on Haunted Hill. And there's a scene where the baddie gets boiled by acid and comes out as a walking skeleton. That was a real skeleton.
Really? You
know? Yeah, it was.
Wow.
But that's the thing. It's a lot cheaper to go to a medical office and say, can we have this skeleton? We'll give you 50 quid. Then going to the special effects guy and saying, hey, build us a skeleton.
Yeah, I've heard that was the thing for Poltergeist in terms of budget. It was cheaper to get actual skeletons than to get prosthetic ones.
Exactly. There's nothing dodgy about it. It's a well-used trait. I'm sure that they still use that. I mean, David Tennant was in a stage play for Macbeth, and they used real skeletons for that.
Wow.
So it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the weird thing was, in the film, I think it's just it's the first ghostly encounter in the bedroom. You know how the closet door opens and Caroline gets sucked into the wardrobe?
Yeah.
Just prior to that, you see a poster just above Robbie's bed. He's got a Star Wars poster and I think an Aliens poster. In between that is a poster for Super Bowl.
Mm.
Now, it's for Super Bowl 22.
Yeah.
In 1982, they were only on Super Bowl 16.
Right.
This Super Bowl poster actually says 1988 Super Bowl. So that's 6 years before a Super Bowl. Why would there be a poster of a Super Bowl 6 years before? Now, the date on the Super Bowl, the place where it is San Diego, January 31st, 1988. Oddly enough, 6 years later, Heather O'Rourke was taken ill on January 31st, 1988, in San Diego.
No way.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
I will share the screenshot of the poster with you. You can put it in the show notes. I'll put it up on Facebook.
Yeah, stick it on the group, because I'm putting this out on Sunday, so stick it in the group then.
What's even weirder, that is really fucking freaky. What's even weirder, the teams that are advertised on that poster are the same teams that made it to the final.
No way. That's amazing. I just got a shiver off that more than the other thing. And was it that venue? Did he know that far in advance? Did he plan the Super Bowl that far in advance to know it was that venue?
No. They wouldn't have done that then. This is 6 years. There's a whole six Super Bowls in between.
But did it take place in San Diego, that Super Bowl? I mean, it's kind of by the by, really.
The Super Bowl in 1988 took place in San Diego. It just says San Diego, California.
Right. Wow.
So, but yeah, that's a weird, weird, weird thing.
That
and it's
is,
not
yeah.
been altered at all.
Wow.
You know,
I mean, it's like, I know when I'd done the Cursed Films episode with Jericho, and I agree with what you're saying about the, you know, if you film a film, and I think even, what's the guy's name? The very famous, I should know his name, the guy who plays the old priest in The Exorcist, and he's also Viggo in Ghostbusters 2.
Snyden.
What's his name? Sorry.
Max von Snyden.
Max von Snyden. Sido, is it? Or Sando?
Yeah. Snyder,
yeah. Yeah. He actually says in the outtakes of The Exorcist that very thing. You know, he said when you make a film over 2 years, many people die. It's not cursed. Exactly. It's all that. But what was interesting in The Exorcist one, getting to, because I agree with what you're saying. You know, film a film over a period of years, you're going to have a series of deaths connected, not necessarily to the film, but people just naturally die. But similar to that, I know that the premiere for The Exorcist in Rome, was highly. You know, it was highly contended by the Catholic Church. And the venue they found for it was next to one of the oldest churches in Rome.
Yeah.
And lovely sunny day. And the day of the premiere, a storm rolled in out of nowhere. Lightning struck that church and the crucifix fell from the top of the church into the main piazza.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, again, it could all just be coincidental, but what a coincidence.
I mean, the thing is, it also makes good publicity, doesn't it?
It's
fantastic. Like, for instance, when they made Snakes on a Plane, at the first showing at the premiere of it in Texas, they found out that they had an outbreak of rattlesnakes in the theatre.
Coincidentally.
So, yeah, it's like, okay, that's kind of weird, you know, but okay, I've been trying to see how that would happen. You're in Texas, you're kind of famous for rattlesnakes, and
yeah,
they want somewhere warm and dark.
Funny enough, talking about like such things, and well, it's directly on topic with what we just talked about. I'm working on the next Jericho episode that I'm going to do with him.
Ooh,
and it's kind of film related in a way, but the angle that I'm going to go with it, and I don't mind saying it on the show, you know, but it's I'm going to look at the Lesser Key of Solomon and its impact on modern culture. So The Lesser Key of Solomon, which you may probably know already, it's like a medieval sort of grimoire, if you like. It's called the Goetia, is its shorter term. But allegedly Solomon captured all of, like, I think it's 92 demons and placed them all inside this brass vial. Mm. And then these magicians later on found out little ways to get these demons out of the vial.
And that's a good idea.
And get them to do their bidding, so to speak. So the Lesser Key of Solomon is a book which you can buy on Amazon, and it's got a sigil, like a little logo, if you like, attached to each of the demons, and how you conjure them and what they can give you. Like, some will give you knowledge, some will give you power, but obviously there's a payoff. You dealing with a demon, you know what I mean? But interestingly, what the episode's going to focus on is how it's pervaded, how this book has pervaded modern culture. So if you look at Hereditary, the demon Paimon in Hereditary comes from the Lesser Key of Solomon. If you look at Valak from the Nun, Valak is a demon in the Lesser Key of Solomon. I think it's the right... Pazuzu is not in... I think he is actually, but I think he's under a different name because they can share names. I think he's Azazel. I'm not too sure. But like the right with Anthony Hopkins, there's a demon. He's possessed by Baal. And again, he's one of the kings from the Lesser Key of Solomon. They also... They're featuring a lot of heavy metal stuff as well, these references. And interestingly enough, one which I need to look into more because I've just started doing the research on it today. I thought that's a good topic. Bed knobs and broomsticks is one of the things in it is a thing called the Star of Astaroth.
Yeah.
Astaroth is a demon from the Lesser Key of Solomon.
Yeah,
so it even pervades Disney. So it's a fascinating little subject. Anyone who's, I mean, I'm putting together this episode, but anyone who, off the back of this chat, wants to, you can, you, if you're Wikipedia, basically, I think it's Goetic Demons, G-O-E-T-I-C, Goetic Demons in Modern Culture, and you'll see this list of like films where which contain references to these demons. You know, it's a very, I just thought it was quite an interesting topic. You know, there's so many horror films which individually, if you're just a horror fan, you might be like, oh, look, there's Hereditary, there's The Rite, there's whichever else, there's Lovely Molly, there's films such as this, and you just think these are all good scary films, but I don't think many people are aware they've all got the one origin story. Is an interesting take.
And now, you can buy this book from Amazon.
Oh, yeah, this is the thing. You can buy The Lesser Key of Solomon on Amazon. Alistair Crowley's actually done a version of it in 1904, which is like it's a more English translation. And it's an interesting thing. There's also, I mean, you know, if anyone's a bit like sensitive to this sort of topic or the deeply religious, maybe stop listening for the next few minutes. But there's also a book available. Do you know Crowley done The Book of Lies? I think it's called The Book of Lies or whichever it was. Somebody's done a remake of that book and they've tried to make it they tried to put it into modern day parlance, if you like. And it's still called The Book of Lies. It's a big, I don't know who wrote it or who's done the translation or whichever, but it's a big red book and it looks like it's got bullet holes in the cover. Anyway, what the, it's basically a Goetia for the modern day. And in it, what it's saying is, and it's a really interesting concept. It kind of takes away the demon aspect, but it keeps it in plain. The take on it is that what people used to call demons. So like what I was saying earlier, if you look at this list of the 92 demons in the Lesser Key of Solomon, it will have like Paimon, who's a king of the demons, whatever. And if you conjure him, he will give you knowledge of foreign languages, for example. That's not accurate, but I'm saying, for example.
I was going to say, that's not the best deal in the world.
Yeah, he gets your soul, you get to speak French. But so there's things like that. There's always a payoff for them. But interestingly, what this book tries to explain is that it was never intended that these were actual demons that you were dealing with. It was apparently ways that you could unlock part of your own subconscious and your own intellect to allow these things to take place.
So a placebo demon.
Exactly, kind of, yeah. So there's a thing. Right. So, for example, I mean, he's not. It's not a very safe book, to be honest. One of the ones to, I think there's. He mentions in the book summoning down Hermes, I think, which isn't a demon. It's obviously like a Greek god or whichever, the god of speed.
Yes.
And he mentions how you can summon Hermes, and what he means by that, literally, the instructions, unbelievably, are like. If you take drugs, take a line of cocaine and say this chant. If you don't, drink lots of coffee and do this. And over a period of like half an hour of self-hypnosis, you will download Hermes to yourself and Hermes can take control. And it's an interesting thing. The point of it is it's kind of, it comes from this occult meaning hidden. And it's an interesting concept because it's basically saying all of these things that we've labeled as demons in the past are within us and they've all got the capability to help us in some form, but there's always a payoff for that part of your psyche coming out. And there's a way that you can bring that out by hacking yourself, if you like.
So we've all got inner demons, basically.
Yeah, but using the word demons in a going deep into the etymology of it all, not the etymology, but you know the history of it all, is the idea that religion it wanted man to serve God, and it wanted man to worship the church, and it wanted to have control. So it demonized literally these parts of man where man could become almost superhuman. He had the ability to do so, but the church didn't want that, allegedly. I'm going on a tangent anyway, but yeah, it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, I think there's always been this sort of thing where these stories come from something. The whole thing about was it the Bermuda Triangle? Was essentially, I know Emma and Dan have just done an episode on the Bermuda Triangle, but wasn't it that essentially a person went missing? They went missing there, and then it was like, oh, they've gone missing. This is a big mystery. Where are they? They turned up 6 months later, just moved on with their life into a different part of the island, and that was it. But this whole folklore thing turns it into this giant mystery. It's almost we mentioned this last time about people who have ghosts at their workplace, much like I think I might have, how it might be just their way of working through a mundane life, so to speak. Now, I'm not saying that's the case on everything, but again, it's kind of like this mystery is being created to exaggerate something in life.
It's a good point.
I
do agree with that. Yeah, I think I'm all for it. I mean, I've got a bloody podcast about the topic, but I do think that I'm one of those people that I'm about to talk about as well. But, you know, there are people out there who try and find wonder in the mundane. And if it doesn't exist, then they still, you know, they can look and say, well, if I twist this and I make that, then this can still be wonderful. I think that's why a lot of people who, as I've said before, there seems to be a link between people who like ghosts. They also play a lot of video games. There's a lot of escapism involved. You know, it's, I've never found anyone who believes in poltergeists and believes in ghosts and all this who doesn't have a really vivid imagination at the same time, which doesn't bode well for credence of ghost stories. But do you know what I mean?
No, I get that. I mean, Hardly Paranormal Jerry, great guy. He basically says, I don't believe in ghosts until I actually see one. Essentially, unless proof of it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But I personally, in my mind, I've seen ghosts. Yeah. I've had a ghost knock me off my ass onto the floor at my elbow. I've had a ghost smash up a table. I've had an empty pub and I heard people running around upstairs. Empty. I've heard ghosts. So I believe it. I'm completely in it. I admit that a lot of YouTube videos that me and you share with each other, I'm getting a bit fed up with the peeking ghosts peeking behind the corner.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, whatever, mate. A lot of TikTok videos where it's like, oh, I was just dancing, I had my door open, the ghost walked past. No, you're just getting a lot of followers.
Yeah, or like the good old camera angle ones as well, where they walk into the room where the lights are going off at a very specific angle, which would give enough time for someone to sneak past them on the left, for example.
Yes. I'm so tempted to put that up on Facebook, the video.
You should. Matt's actually done a really good fake video to prove how easy it is, and you should put it up because it's excellent.
I'll tell you what I will do. Straight after this a bit. I think that there's a lot of videos which are mysterious. I think there's a lot of them that are bullshit, and very rarely there's one which are like, right, okay, that's a ghost.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
Mellow Bird, he is Kitchen, the guy from, I think it's Norfolk. Mellow Bird. He had a haunting in his house in early 2000s.
Yeah, it was.
Shit goes flying around. That is not wires. That is some fucking ghost right there. That's a poltergeist, easily. That's a very angry ghost. And I can't see how it can be faked. You know, but
interestingly,
that's just me.
I mean, I'm going to have to play devil's advocate here because, interestingly, I think he's been debunked. now Mellow Bear.
Had he?
Yeah, because he had me hook, line, and sink. He really did. And I think he's even come out and acknowledged himself now that he's like worked in special effects and stuff.
Oh, no.
I'll try and find it and I'll send it to you if so, the sort of article. But believe you me, that's not like, you know, I'm not saying fool you. What I mean is I was completely into this. And it was only by trying to find more videos on him that I came across a video of him saying, I've now, because somebody pulled him up, I think, on a piece of fishing wire. And he'd done a video. I think I'm going back a good 5 years, but he'd done a video. He may have deleted it now, but he'd done a video saying, here's the original and here's how I've managed to edit out the fishing wire using this such and such a software. But I was completely in on it. Completely in on it.
Yeah. I was fooled completely. You know.
But it shows you just how good these fakes can be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as much as, and I think I can say this quite well, a lot of people don't like the Warrens. Really,
yeah,
you know, not just in their personal life, but some of the things that they came up with. The whole thing about the Amityville, I still maintain that I think that was fake. I think it was fake. The only thing, and it was you that pointed this out, it wasn't anything else, it was only you who pointed this out to me on ages ago, not even on the Dark Paranormal, is when you said about the gunshots being silent, nobody else heard them.
Yeah.
I was like, damn! You know, that's the only mystery thing. The whole thing about the pig's eyes, there was a neighbour had a cat. That was quite well known to crawl around everywhere. The little boy in the picture when they had the seance and the journalists.
Yes, very famous photo, yeah.
Yeah, very famous, but at the same time, they said, well, the door was open the entire time.
Right.
So, because we had all these wires and leads going out to the van, so somebody could have walked in. Okay, that's not saying that somebody did walk in, but there's an explanation right there.
Yeah, but I think you're right, though. I mean, for me, it's the gunshots, and that's nothing to do with the Lutzes. That's, you know, that's down to the DeFeo, who's just passed away, apparently, but down to the DeFeo killings.
On Sunday, I think it was. I didn't know how to feel about him passing away. Do you know why?
Go on.
Because I feel that he was the one who could turn around and say, yeah, it was all a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
And this is how I did it. There was the person right there who could turn around and say, yeah, I put my hands up. I did just kill my family.
Yeah.
You know? And no, I wasn't possessed. I was drunk. I was on heroin. You know? But we'll never get that now.
No, it's very true. I mean, there's you could do literally weeks worth of programming on Amityville, just not even paranormal. You know, if you look down the hole, there's a mafia link apparently and all this carry on. So Lord knows what is going to be from that. I mean, my issue with the Warrens I didn't have an opinion on them as such until I read about Maurice Gross dealing with them at the Enfield Haunting. Where he said they turned up and said to him, you can make a lot of money from this. And he showed them the door. But according to apart from that 30-minute conversation with Maurice, they had nothing to do with Enfield. Yet, The Conjuring 2 comes out and all of a sudden they're in the living room in Enfield saying, oh my God, what do we do?
Yeah, they were literally only, in fact, were they even there? I thought they just met them nearby. They weren't actually allowed in the house. Or were they actually in the house?
They got into the house because there are photos of them with the Hodgkins. I'm pretty sure of seeing that. But yeah, they didn't, you know, they'd done no investigation as such. I think Lorraine's come out and said she felt a presence there while she was in the house. But Maurice Gross has gone on record and said, no, they were just charlatans. They just wanted to make a quick buck. Right then, dude. I think we're at our time. It's been an absolute pleasure as always. And and we must, of course, get you back on. You are a regular feature on the show. And, of course, King Admin over on the Facebook page. Don't forget, guys, go and check out Matt and Frey's podcast, Full Movie Podcast. It's awesome, and he knows his stuff, as you've clearly heard today also. So if you want to know anything about any film, you'll find it out on that show. I notice you've got Speed coming up soon.
Yeah, we're actually going to release it on Thursday. I'm going to plug something before you even ask me if I'm going to plug something.
I was going to ask, but go on.
So we've got Speed coming out on Thursday, so it's previous Thursday before the episode's out. Yeah, we've actually got a special episode coming up. Zack Snyder's Justice League cut is coming out on Thursday or Friday. So we're going to do a special episode reviewing that Snyder cut. And it's 4 hours long. So
wow.
I'm not looking forward to that. But yeah, that's what we're going to do. Because we're coming up to the speed is going to be episode 80.
Yeah.
And
wow.
Basically, I'm running out of films. So, you know, I really want to get to episode 100. So, but yeah, so we're going to do a modern film for once.
Amazing. And so, I mean, this one, what we're talking about now, this is going out obviously on Sunday coming. So that episode will have been out by now, will it? People can go and listen to it now.
Yeah, they can. We're on Spotify. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on Apple, you know. So I think we're on basically everything. So yeah, amazing. Check us out, please.
So there you go. And please do go and check it out because, as you've heard here, Matt's a great talker. And like I said earlier, he knows his stuff when it comes to the film industry. Okay then, Matt, I shall let you go, my good mate. And all of my love to Freya and to your little Reggie. That's your cat, by the way, in case anyone's picking up now.
No, I've got no cat by me, I don't think. Reggie!
No, it was just in case anyone thought I was referring to your penis by saying, and your little Reggie. But
that's not what I call it. No, that's an army. It's not.
All right, and your giant army.
It's not. I don't have a name for my dick.
Well, you know what? This is my fault. This is why I struggle with ending podcasts, and that's why we're now talking about your penis, Matt. I sincerely apologise.
Cheers, Kev. Thank you for naming my penis.
Well, that's it. We broke up there, so what people heard was thanks for nagging my geek. So what did you say? Thanks for what?
Thanks for naming my penis.
Wow, we said it again. Amazing. You're very welcome, mate. Anytime. Anytime. All right, dude. It's been a pleasure. See you
Thanks,
now.
Mate. Have a good one.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.